Hey, Phil, let go of my ego. Put aside the ego and embrace the moment.
You're listening to The Stone Tapes with Sam Stone, David J. Howe, Patricia H. Ash, George Mann, and Robin Pierce. A show which sheds a little slice of geek sunshine into the ether.
S-A-N-T-A-C-L-A-W-S. Santa Claus.
Oh, you better watch out. You better not cry. Telling you why Santa Claus is coming to town. Oh, he's making a list, checking it twice. Gonna find out who's naughty and nice. Santa Claus is coming to town. He sees you when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake. He knows when you've been bad or good, so be good for goodness sake. So you better watch out, you better not cry, better not pout, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town, your town. He knows where you live. He knows that your window's open. He knows what lives under your bed.
I'm Samantha Lee Howe, the author formerly known as Sam Stone, and if it was good enough for Prince, it's good enough for me. What, no laugh? No canned laughter? Oh, my God.
Have we got any canned laughter at all? Nothing.
Well, look, this is what the Stone Tapes is about this year. Welcome to the Christmas 2020, the year of the pandemic. But we are going to be taking a very positive view of the year. And we're going to be talking a lot about what was good about the year. Wow, is that hard to find?
It's probably like, not. It's the lockdown tapes. Fantastic.
But of course, I'm going to introduce our wonderful guests here, or rather panellists, wonderful Stone Tapers. Well, they are panellists in a way, because we are panellists.
I can't see any panels at all.
Well, never mind that. Anyway, we've got here JVJ Howe, very vocal already.
Hello.
God help us.
Hello, yes.
And then we've got the lovely George Mann. Say hello.
Hello, everyone.
Hi, George. Patricia H. Ash.
Hello.
And in case you've forgotten, the H stands for?
All of us together? Hottie. And we've got the lovely Robin Pierce.
Hey, how are you doing?
Hi, Robin. And of course, our wonderful Eloise Sheehan.
Hiya.
Hi. Well, yay. Okay. And, of course, never forgetting our amazing producer, Alex Levchuk. Hello, Alex.
Hello, everybody.
Yay.
So, kicking off, what has the year been like?
It's been dreadful. It's been absolutely awful. But I have to mention that our listener, who's obviously going to be really enjoying this, can't realise that we're on Zoom and that we can see everybody in beautiful Technichrome single vision colour on the screen. And I am very, very impressed with Patricia, your wonderful T-shirt.
Yes,
which
amazing.
Seems to be some kind of a Star Wars party animal thing.
Love it.
Funky thing going on there. And I also love Eloise's Tron earphones. They're amazing. Fantastic.
And George, you're looking very Christmassy.
George has got a Christmas jumper on, so he's letting us all to shame.
I put it on hurriedly before we went on the camera. So I'll try and make everyone feel festive.
You look amazing.
It's definitely worked.
Well, we're obviously all of us at home while we do the show. But of course, we're still going to take a trip over to Robin's castle. And he's going to tell us all about his year in film.
I mean, what I'm particularly impressed here is that Robin's castle looks suspiciously like a small room full of DVDs. It's very strange.
How about that?
How about that, Robin?
How about the castle has the portcullis down, the drawbridge is up, and this one is being done from Pierce Central, the nerve centre.
Pierce Central.
We're liking it.
Wow.
As you notice, I have a chair that's just like a Bond villain's, okay?
Yeah.
You just need
so you're like in the Pierce cave in the bowels of the castle.
Absolutely.
I'm just wondering where the blonde cat is.
Oh, no. There may be a border collie very nearby.
Even better.
Right, so what have you been watching this year, Robin? What's been going on?
Not a great deal. Thank you for asking.
Well, this is a year of being able to watch.
This is going to be a very short show, Alex.
Thank you and good night. Well, you know, I was looking back at my list because I always keep handwritten lists of what I see and when. And last year, I saw 56 films at the cinema. This year, despite a strong start with 1917, it petered out the first week in March and ended up being 11. Just 11. And of those...
Oh, that's shocking.
That's
shocking.
I know.
It says it all really about the poor theatrical world, as it were, and cinemas and how damaged they've been. But we're not going to focus on the negative.
We're not going to focus on that. We're going to focus on what was good in the cinema that I saw. This is all my own personal view. But first of all, just for fun...
Other films are available.
Let's take a look at what was really, really bad, shall we?
Yeah.
Two on my roll of shame. In second place was, surprisingly enough, the last chance Fox had to do anything with the X-Men when they gave us the New Mutants.
Oh.
Now, it was a strange film. It was as if they decided to make a horror movie with superhero characters that we had never heard of, and with a about the small change left from any other film.
Now, what you've just described is like every Marvel film to me.
Can we mute him?
That won't be a popular video.
Superheroes I've never heard of.
Room. Silently.
It didn't work for me on any level. But it's still not the worst film I ever saw.
What was it called, Robin? Sorry?
The New Mutants.
Was that the actual title?
That's correct. It's set in the X-Men universe, which, of course, has now reverted back to Marvel, being that Disney, who own Marvel, now own Fox as well.
Okay. So are we still talking like Professor X in his wheelchair? But
No, he wasn't there. These are the people who may become X-Men in the future. They're basically teenagers with hormonal problems, way too many hormonal problems, and superpowers. Hormonal problems, superpowers, you know, it's not
so
a party.
So it's like teen X-Men.
Yeah. But not the X-Men that we know. I mean, it's not, you know, sort of Cyclops and Wolverine as kids. These may graduate.
Storm and the ones and the stuff and Rogue and all that lot.
No, they're new ones.
New ones, yes.
The new ones.
It's like
the... in the title, David.
X-Men, the next generation. If they live that long.
So, Robin, sorry to interrupt you again. I really want to hear what you thought about the film, but just to clarify for anybody who isn't an X-Men fan, this is, yes, I am actually, so I was with you all the way on that. I do love the original X-Men, and this then is a reimagining, I assume,
characters. No. It's all in the same... Well, actually, how many times have they reimagined that? Because you can't make sense of the X-Men movie timeline anyway.
That's a good one.
It's an awful way to finish what has been, by and large, a pretty decent series. So, moving on, the worst film I saw this year, Underwater.
That wasn't the worst. Okay, yes.
This is the worst. Underwater with Kristen Stewart. You may remember Kristen Stewart as the dour, emotionless, expressionless zombie from the Twilight films who seemed to think that she could be a love interest of some kind, but, you know...
There's really no way only... to talk about Edward Sullen.
this She's is an underwater adventure with overtones of Alien, and it is dire in every way. We are supposed to believe that these people can go deep sea diving and, you know, pressure and things like that just aren't a problem. It's just awful. Please do the world a favor. Keep away from it. It hasn't yet even been released on DVD or on any of the streaming networks, as far as I know, because I've been looking for it just to see, you know, in a moment of like movie sort of self-flagellation, can I sit through this again? I doubt that I could, but hey, I would try. Now,
what's it called?
Underwater. Right.
You know, water, glug, glug, glug.
Under. But with Kristen Stewart.
Yes. As I've already told Alex on an earlier show, she plays the whole film as if she is suffering the worst menstrual cramps ever.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my dearie me.
Right then.
The script that did it to her, I guess.
Personal favourites. In number three, we have Birds of Prey, which I loved. Latest entry in the DC universe.
Is that a Star Trek thing?
That's good. No,
I said DC universe.
Oh, I thought Birds of Prey was like a Klingon warship.
Well, it is a Klingon warship, but it's also Harley Quinn's posse.
It's an understandable mistake.
Mm-hmm. He's a nightmare. Don't worry, I'll pull him out of here in a minute.
Oh, goodness me. We listen with our ears, David.
Birds of Prey. Birds of Prey, which has nothing to do with Klingon warships, but is something to do with something else.
Harley Quinn, ex-girlfriend of the Joker, and her new team of outlaws going against Ewan McGregor as Batman villain The Black Mask. It's a really, really good film. Did not deserve, in my opinion, the drubbing it got from critics.
Is it better than Suicide Squad?
Do you mean Suicide? squad.
I might have done.
Okay, not really as good as I liked it. Second place, we had the remake, the latest remake of The Invisible Man, which I thought worked very, very well and really gave me some shivers, which is something that doesn't normally happen in the cinema when watching a horror movie. None of it was that telegraphed. It was a very capable and ably presented remake of a much-loved classic. And in my opinion, the best film I saw this year was Russell Crowe's Unhinged. If you like films like Falling Down or One Hour Photo, where an ordinary citizen goes a little bit crazy and starts stalking people, this happens as a road rage incident gone way out of control. And to me, it presented a very accurate picture of the world as it is today. A good example of this is a scene where somebody gets murdered in a diner in front of people. They've all got mobile phones. Instead of calling 911, they are actually filming and streaming it. What an indictment of the world today. That's one I would urge you all to see.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Unhinged. And that's Russell Crowe. Russell Crowe, yes. Is he performing in that, or is he just a producer in that?
No, he is the star. He is the star. He is the unhinged one.
Interesting role for him.
Very well. Has anyone else seen that one, Unhinged?
No. Yeah, I went to see it with Robin.
Yes, she did.
And Eloise, what was your thought of the film then? Did you agree with Robin's review of that?
Yeah, it was amazing. And the scenes that they actually did, there was a few car crashes and stuff. They were like breathtaking and unnaturally like realistic. Like, they really went full out with this film.
Wow.
Amazing. Wow. Amazing.
That's brilliant. Thank you, Robin.
Well,
you're welcome.
Thank you so much, Robin. And I'm so delighted to say that I would love to hear from George Mann right now and hear what all of your news, George. What have you been up to? I mean, I believe you've had a very, very busy year. That's right.
Man alive.
Yeah, I mean, firstly, I'm alive. Yeah. So, I've been very lucky actually this year because, unlike, you know, a lot of unfortunate people who've had difficult work circumstances, as you know, Sam, as a writer, you can carry on often. So yeah. I've been able to actually just get my head down and work. And it's been an up and down year, as it has for everyone, I think. You know, bookended with lots of hospital stuff. For the start of the year, my wife in hospital, but very positive news is she's in full remission from her illness.
That's fantastic.
And then just a few weeks ago, I had my appendix whipped out, which was an interesting thing to happen during the time of COVID. So, there's a full story there, but we won't bore our listener with that one. But in between, I've managed to sandwich quite a lot of good stuff, I think. So at the start of lockdown, things looked a bit grim. A lot of publishers uncertain about what was happening. A lot of people on furlough. So a lot of projects got put on hiatus or cancelled. So I had a kind of window and I thought, I've got two options here. I can either sit back and think and worry about it, or I can write something. So I filled the gap and I wrote something that I've been wanting to write for a few years now, actually, a fantasy novella, which I've talked about with Alex before, called Broken Things. And that's just come out from Pierce Publishing as a limited edition novella.
And
I'm
really happy because it's...
Congratulations.
Thank you. Because it's one of those things, you know, I'm very lucky, I'm not complaining at all, but you get into this circumstance where you've got book series running. So the next book you have to write is the next book in the series. So you become, you know, stuck into a rhythm. And what coronavirus did was break that rhythm. So I was able to go, right, I've got a window to do something new and different. And it was a real palate cleanser. So very excited about that. And next year I'm looking to do more with those characters and that setting. Again, similar thing. I was very lucky. My comic publisher in the States, Vault Comics, managed to keep things moving as well, because a lot of publishers stopped while the comic shops were shut and comic distribution was shut. But Vault kept going, said, "Come on, we'll get the issues in the bank so that when things open up again, we've got them all." So we kept working, and my comic engine orders continued to go.
That's very very foresighted of them, I think, yeah. You know, very, very foresighted, because some people would just go, right, we're not earning anything right now, so we're stopping, you know, production, which is always a big mistake, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. But also, I think understandable when you look at how much a comic book costs to make, not so much for the writer, but the art costs involved, you know, tens of thousands of dollars to make an issue. Sometime, you know, I think to make a trade paperback's worth is you're looking at $30,000. So to keep going through a period where you can't release things is quite tough, but brilliant of them. And then
didn't Diamond kind of fold halfway through the year? Did I hear that right?
They didn't fold, but they stopped distributing. They closed the warehouse down, which because the comic shops weren't taking stock. And then what happened is, DC decided to try and keep going, so they started working with new partners, which is, you know, and in some ways it's a good thing because Diamond have had a monopoly on the whole comic distribution market, but in other ways it meant when Diamond opened up again they didn't have as much in the way of stuff to distribute because other people were working on DC Comics, so it's tumultuous market at the moment. But one of the things that's most excited me, and I played a small part in this, but actually it's more to do with other people, is Sexton Blake's made a big comeback this year. And I think I've probably talked on the show before about my fondness for Sexton Blake, which is a Victorian pulp hero, who I think more words have been written about him in the English language than any other character ever. I think is because at one point they were publishing 4 novels and 4 novellas a month, as well as short stories and comic strips through the 20s and 30s. And Rebellion recently bought the back catalogue of IPC comics, so all the classic British comics, and they got the Sexton Blake rights and all the backlist with it. And Mark Hodder, who's a friend of mine who lives over in Spain, but he's curated a series of reprints. So he's brought these kind of classic stories back, themed collections, and they've been a real joy to read. And recently Rebellion did a magazine special, like a bookazine special, Return of Sexton Blake, and they got loads of articles in it, and they reprinted some old comic strips, and they asked me to write the first comic strip since, I think, the 1970s for Sexton Blake, so we got to relaunch it with a brand new comic story. So it's just a 10-page story, but it was great to do. So that's out now as well, and one of my kind of Christmas routines is to read a Christmas Sexton Blake story every year. So I've just worked out which one I'm going to be reading. They used to publish them. So I've got one from 1914 where Sexton Blake's away at war. And the woman he loves is up to no good because she's a criminal, but sometimes on the side of the good guys. And she's solving cases while he's away in the trenches. So I'm looking forward to reading that.
That's amazing. Well done. Well done, George, because that sounds fantastic. What a busy year so far. So have you any other exciting news for us? I'm sure there is.
Well, the TV stuff, are you thinking?
I am.
So I've got two shows in development, essentially. So based on the Witchwood novels, kind of supernatural crime series that I've been writing, there's a UK company called Black Dog who've optioned that, and they've written some scripts. And are currently talking to networks about making it, so that's good. And then over in the US, the series I do, Ghost of Manhattan, has been picked up by Legion M, who are a huge organisation, and they've partnered with Powerhouse Animation, who did the Castlevania series, and they're going to be making an anime series based on the books. And they've got a showrunner, Aaron Waltke, who's been working on Star Trek, so they've got some really good pedigree.
How very exciting! And how did that come about, George?
Just through with Witchwood, it was just I was lucky enough that the guy Dan Gaster had picked up the book, read the book, found me online, contacted me, and said, "I loved your book, and I'd like to make a TV show of it." Okay, let's have a chat.
Wow,
funnily enough,
that's living the dream. That's amazing.
Whereas the other one is a chap I worked with before. I've written some scripts for other animation shows. That's one of the other things I've been doing in the background this year. So there's a chap who I knew called Bowman Modine, and he picked up the books because he knew me, I had a look at them and said, I think we can do something with this. And then he started to involve other people and suddenly it spiraled into this whole big situation. So,
wow.
So yes. So I'm just keeping all my fingers crossed at the moment. We're waiting for the news of kind of which networks are interested and, you know, and when it might go into production and all of that kind of side of things. So fingers crossed.
Has anybody got any questions for George on that?
No? When do you get to write a Mandalorian episode?
Have you seen the finale yet?
No, we haven't seen it at all.
Any of it.
Right, no spoilers.
No spoilers.
You have to watch before, and seriously, like, if you've got any interest in Star Wars and you've watched any of The Mandalorian so far, stay off social media until you have seen the season finale.
I think we're likely to do that.
You see, this is me, and that, and it's just like, all I know is, like, that's the thing with Baby Yoda, isn't it?
Yes. Yep. Yeah, but it gets better and better, and there's big surprises, but I'm not going to say anything about what they are.
My lockdown plan, now that we're in lockdown from midnight to night, is to blitz all of Clone Wars, all of Rebels, all of Mandalorian, because somebody's told me to get the full benefit of season two of Mandalorian, I need to be fully conversant with Clone Wars and maybe Rebels. So I'm going to do them in that order.
Yeah, I think
that makes sense.
It makes sense. I mean, you don't have to have seen them by any stretch, but you'll know who these characters are. Yeah, the thing with Clone Wars,
it's astonishing, isn't it? It's astonishing. I saw today on the internet that apparently Mark Hamill had never seen any of Star Wars before he made A New Hope, which was extraordinary. I just, you know, how could that be true? That was just amazing.
How could they make episode four before they made episode one, two?
Yeah, three? Yeah. You've never seen anything.
How dare they recast Ewan McGregor?
It's amazing.
The thing you'll find with Clone Wars,
I think the girls got that one.
that is actually amazing. And with that in mind, I'd like to just skip over to Patricia now and hear about what she's been up to. And
in deepest, darkest Texas.
What have you been doing during lockdown, Patricia? And is there anything positive you can tell us about how that's been?
How's your tan coming along?
What tan? Is this something I don't know about?
It's sunny Texas.
It's raining right now. Well, I haven't been going anywhere. I have not left this apartment much in, a long time. But that's okay, because due to health stuff, I didn't really leave my apartment much anyway. So it's not been a huge adjustment, lifestyle-wise. But I've been doing a lot of game nights over Zoom, playing Dungeons and Dragons with the internet, which is nice, actually. I've been interacting more with people since lockdown happened than I was beforehand.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, because it's all online now, which means it's more accessible for me. And I've been able to see more theatrical productions because they're streaming. They're on YouTube. Like the National Theater has streamed a whole bunch of their performances. So I got to see Tom Hiddleston and Coriolanus, for instance, which I would have never been able to afford to do otherwise. So that's been really lovely. But that's been really lovely. And I've been making a bunch of masks, so many masks, just while watching Shakespeare on YouTube, because I can. And then watching Disney Plus. Disney Plus has been the best thing that's happened this year, I think, because not only do we have The Mandalorian, which is phenomenal, the first season, amazing. Every single episode is absolutely phenomenal. I feel like we got a little bit cheated in the early couple of episodes in season two, because they seemed like a little on the short side and just not quite as good. But the first episode and then like the last four or five episodes of The Mandalorian season two are just kind of amazing. Just kind of amazing. Yeah, and the, and earlier this year, Disney released a Pixar movie, Onward, on their Disney Plus thing. So that is the sweetest thing. It's sort of Dungeons and Dragons-y. Like, it's a fantasy setting, and the elves and the dragons and stuff are just, you know, they're doing ordinary things, like going to high school. The main character is a high school student. And there's this really sweet family journey, and, like, magic comes back into the world. And it's just really, really precious. And if you don't cry at least twice during that movie, you are a psychopath. And since I've been doing a lot of Dungeons and Dragons, I feel like it really spoke to me this year. And that's what my shirt is, actually. It's some cute, fluffy animals playing Dungeons and Dragons. So it says party animal. Okay.
So I think I heard on the internet that they were planning a new Dungeons and Dragons film or something, and
yes,
people were interested in
starring
that.
Chris Pine, as far as I know, which should be good.
Interesting.
I have no idea what they're going to do with it, because there's so much lore that you could go anywhere. Yeah. You could use something that already exists, or you could go somewhere totally new. It's going to be amazing. Probably
is that Disney? Is it Disney or someone else? Or
I don't know. I
because Disney seems to own everybody these days. It's just,
Disney owns Wizards of the Coast, which is who owns Dungeons and Dragons.
That's probably not.
But I don't know who's got the film and who's optioned that at all. I have no.
I think one of the interesting things that's happened this year is that there is so much more interaction, like you said, Patricia, online. I mean, even my daughter yesterday sent me a message saying that she couldn't talk to me because she was doing a Dungeons and Dragons thing from 6 till 11 tomorrow. And I was like, what? This is a whole new concept to me, gaming online like that. I guess it's always gone on a little bit, because people have played interactive games together, haven't they?
And I think I think as well, Sam, a lot of the games have like a chat board with them, so you can kind of talk to the other people that are playing, and as well as playing the game and stuff. So it kind of, it's a lot more social, perhaps.
It's a whole new way of living that we're all experiencing right now, which is actually, like you said, Patricia, quite a plus thing, because you're now interacting more with people than you were before, which is something that we're really interested in this year. For this show particularly, is how well we've survived this and how well we're taking positivity forward into the future. Now, I believe, Eloise, you said
you're in trouble now.
You said on the group today you had something to tell us, and I would like to know what that is. What
I'll
is
tell
it?
You all of it. I've had a bit of a change in my direction of work at the moment, and somehow managed to get onto some film sets recently. So for the past few sort of weeks, I've been working as an actor on a feature film.
They've all been completely empty film sets because we're all locked down and no one's making any films, but you've managed to get on the sets. That's brilliant, Eloise.
Yeah, not like a main actor or anything, just one of the first supporting actors.
Well, tell us how that came about, Eloise. How did you go into that?
I don't know. I ended up randomly emailing people and got it purely by chance, and everyone else there was with agencies and other stuff. But I've been signed up to some agencies now. I did some work, and I go back in January to finish it, but it's the final film from a really well-known horror franchise, so it'll be pretty cool when it comes out in October.
Wow!
Well done.
Thank you.
That's fantastic.
Great.
That's brilliant. You are Freddy. That's brilliant.
Obviously, I wouldn't need the makeup.
Well, quite. That is obvious. Yeah. Yes, that's absolutely obvious. Where's the hockey mask? Have you got that there as well?
Robin's got that.
Oh, okay. That's brilliant. Wow.
Well, what's really interesting about that is because in this situation, would you have ever normally thought that you would go into doing a little bit of acting?
No, I normally hate being on the front of the camera. I don't even like being on the camera here. But it seemed to work pretty well. Being in costume and other stuff sort of seemed to make it a lot easier. So it's quite a good
experience. Well, you'll have to keep us in the loop so that we can rent the film and stream it and then go, ha, ha.
I will. I'll be cut out of the whole thing. But, yeah, I will let you know.
That's brilliant.
I think we're going to absolutely love seeing you in whatever that is. And when you can tell us when you're not under an NDA anymore, I could tell us all about that, because I'm sure you are at the moment.
That's fantastic.
Amazing.
So, Sam, what have you been up to this year? We've heard from everybody else. So what have you been doing this year?
Well, this year to me has been... Gosh, I'll try and moderate my language. Not very good. Not very good.
Yeah, you are live.
Not very good, yeah. Not very good in terms of, like everyone else, it was horrendous. As some of you may know, my new book, my new thriller, my very first thriller, came out at the beginning of the year in February, and everything looked rosy, and I was like so excited, and I was like, this is going to be amazing. And then we all got locked down and everything that I was supposed to do was just finished. It was cancelled. All the bookstores I was supposed to do, all the talks I was supposed to do, all the conventions, even Sci-Fi Weekend that David and I were involved in, was cancelled or postponed. And so obviously the beginning of the year did look very, very grim. And for the first month, I ate too much. For those of you who can see me on Zoom, yes, you can see that. I ate too much and still struggling with that one, and I drank too many cocktails in a way to survive. But then after a month I thought, this is crazy. I've really got to just, if I'm going to get through this, the one thing that makes me happy in the world is writing books. And so I was already in the middle of writing one novel that I was hoping to sell. And so I got my head down and finished it. And then my agent, Camilla, said, okay, we'll submit this now to HarperCollins to one more chapter and let's see what they think of it. And it took about 6 weeks, 2 months before they came back, and they loved it. And that became The House of Killers. And but not only did they love it, they wanted me to write, this was about June by then. They said, we had this Zoom meeting, a bit like we're having now, guys, actually. and it was all very lovely and very positive. And I was like, oh my gosh, they love it. Because there's nothing a writer loves more than people telling them they love their book. Because it doesn't, you know, usually we hear the bad news, not the good news first. And so, basically, they were saying how wonderful it was, but they wanted two more in the series. Unfortunately, I kind of anticipated this, so I thought about it and how I could take this into to make this become a series. So we talked about that, and I said, yeah, I can absolutely do two more books for you. I was like, okay, can you write those, the book two by October and book three by December? And I'm going... you know, there was a few exclamation marks and stars.
Always say yes. Just but I was always say yes.
Oh, yeah, sure, I could do that. I could do always that. Yeah, say absolutely. Yes. And I did. I did say yes. And I knew I could, actually, but I hoped I could anyway. Let's put it that way. I hoped I could. And so after that, it gave me a little bit of the kick up the jacksie to sort of say, well, you've got to write book two now. And so I sat down and wrote it, should I say. And my friend Fraser said to me when we were having this discussion about that, he said, you just said to me, well, I sat down and wrote the book. I said, well, yeah, the only way to ease the pain is to get on with the work. And he said, but you make it sound so easy, but as George will know, no, it's not easy. Am I right?
Yes, very right.
Even writing in a series when you know the characters, it's even almost more pressure.
Yeah, because you've got the continuity to worry about then as well.
You've got all the continuity and you've also got all the, you know, where are you going to take these characters? How are you going to develop them? Yeah. Are you going to do something better than last time? Big pressure. And I was also writing in a genre that I wasn't used to, because I was suddenly doing a spy thriller espionage series that I, and so it required an awful lot more research. But in the middle of that, I finished book two, and then the lovely Fraser Hines introduced me to a lady called Terry Dwyer, who is started her own production company called Buffalo Dragon with a guy called Greg Barrow, also a brilliant producer. And they were looking to make a thriller this year. And Terry said, you know, I've read your book. I love it. I love The Stranger in Our Bed. I want it, you know, but we need a screenplay. And I went, I could do that in 2 weeks. Oh, everyone's seeing my face now at that. God. Yes, I did. I did it to fourth draft in 2 weeks, which is what I promised. And we eventually ended up on draft 9, which was awesome, with a lot of input and discussion. And as you know, George will know this, once you start to let a screenplay out there, it becomes a collaboration. So you do start working with the director on what will work on the screen, what will work for from the producer's point of view, what they can afford to do. So there's lots of discussions like that. And it was amazing. And I learned loads from the process of doing that. In between, I had to also write book three. I managed to do it sounds like, yes, I can do that. No, it wasn't easy, but I did do it. I pulled a lot of late nights.
Three novels and a screenplay this year, basically.
Stressed a hell of a lot.
No, well, there's more novels than that, George, because I think she's written another two as well.
Well, I'm sort of like 40K into a fifth now.
Fifth novel. How many is that? Fifth novel.
I'd written another one earlier in the year, and... Wow. And I've got another one halfway, but I've given myself a rest the last few weeks. I think I needed it. You were talking about palate cleansers. I needed a rest.
Yeah. But the extraordinary thing is in the middle of lockdown, Buffalo Dragon and Terry Dwyer managed to get a screenplay off of Sam. They managed to get an entire film together, which started filming on the 23rd of November. It actually wrapped yesterday. So they've actually done a 20-day shoot throughout this whole period with an amazing cast.
Absolutely amazing cast.
Of the film of The Stranger in Our Bed. And we just can't wait to see it now. I mean,
we've seen some of the rushes. We have been on set.
We went down on set and said hello to everybody and
massive
saw what's going on. We did a cameo.
We're not saying what.
It's obviously
out for us.
It's obviously nowhere near the input that Eloise has got, you know, in her horror film and her appearance there. But we did a little cameo, which is lovely.
You won't miss us, though. I'm sure you won't miss it.
But it's amazing that, you know, in this period of lockdown, that this film company has managed to, you know, move the engine to get this shoot together, and it's just an astonishing amount of work. When you think of all the different creatives, lighting, sound, costumes, directors, actors.
Hugely professional outfit, though. Seriously. I mean, the minute we arrived on set, we were just like, this is just...
Just proper.
These people really know what they're doing.
Absolute proper. Brilliant sound guy and just incredible kind of work ethic, wasn't it? Just to get this thing done.
And one of the things that's a big concern as a writer, and I'm sure George knows what I'm talking about with this, is... And it'd be the same for you. Are they going to really represent the book that you wrote? Isn't that a concern?
It's a real thing, isn't it? And then when you're talking to these people, you're listening for the, like, that they understand. Because for me, it's always about, like, the guy who's doing Witchwood. He says, look, I can't follow precisely what happens in the book because we're just, you know, we have to make it work for the screen. But... I think these are the most important elements. This is the tone we're aiming for. And suddenly you go, you understand where I was coming from. And now it's a true adaptation, making it suitable for a new medium. Whereas there are other people who come in and go, actually, I just want that book as an excuse to write my own film. And they're the people you want to avoid.
Well, I mean, as Sam was doing the script, I mean, there was this realisation. Which, you know, if you actually stop for 2 seconds and actually think about it, it's blindingly obvious that you can't take a 300-page novel and turn it into a 90-minute screenplay without losing something. It's not possible.
At the end of the day, you can do as many locations, as many characters you want in a book. You can also do as many twists and turns in a book as you possibly want. And indeed, you know, Stranger has a many, many twists and turns. But however, there are elements of such certain things like timeline that don't always work in a long way on a film, because if you're writing a thriller and you want tension, then sometimes you have to crash the timeline together, and that did change the dynamic of what we were doing. But in fact, one of the wonderful things I discovered, though, I wasn't really worried about it, because Terry was so amazing, the director was so amazing, that I felt that they really wanted to visualize the dream. They really were so enthusiastic, they really wanted to do it right. And so when we got on set, though, was the moment when I looked at it and saw it being filmed, and I saw scenes being filmed that I'd written, and I looked at David and I went, that's my film. and it was really, I was tearing up, you know. I was like, but not only is it my film, but it's also my book. It's like, I knew I had to change things. I'd done that, and I knew, but it really felt like the book. I really felt like the characters were being visualized properly. They were being represented in the right way. And the feeling was that this is the story that I wanted to tell, even though it's had to change a little bit, it's had to morph a little bit. And that was a wonderful experience. Did you feel like that, George? Have you seen any footage yet?
So no, not footage yet. And I've written the screenplay for that. So the screenplays I've written have been for animation, which is a slightly different process.
Yeah.
You know, you see rushes of animatics, and then you get them tweaked, and then they do the, you know, different layers, and then the voice actors do their bits and you have an input. So it's a different process. And with Witchwood and with Ghosts, really, which is again an animation, I'm not writing. I mean, I'm hoping that with Ghosts, I'm going to get to write some episodes because it's a TV series.
Yeah.
But I'm not the main showrunner, because they need it, you know, to the budget to get a show out of Powerhouse and from the Castlevania people is millions. And to get someone like Netflix or Fox or whatever to sign on to it, they need a recognisable writer at the top, not, you know, who's experienced in writing TV and animation. So I had to kind of go, and it's a similar process. It's like, so I almost like interviewed the guy and had a long chat with him, and were like, is he going to honour the books and what I was trying to do? And I came away from that thinking, yeah, absolutely he is. And he said, I want you to read every script. I want you to have an input into it. I'm going to get an executive producer credit and a creative consultant credit on it. And then hopefully write some scripts. So, but I can't wait to go through that process that you've gone through. And so, I mean, I dream of writing a live action script and seeing it made. So I'm so chuffed for you. So it's
just incredible. Thank you, George.
Thank you, George. And I think you will, because honestly, this is like the first stepping stone into, I can't believe I've been so lucky. This just seems like a miracle year to me in that way.
So next year we want Robin to be like his top 10 of films. We want number one to be The Stranger in Our Bed.
No, we're not allowed to coerce people.
Not allowed to coerce anybody, but I'll cut his legs off. But we want that. And so it's Stranger in Our Bed, and it's starring
Samantha Bond, Emily Berrington, you might know from Humans, who was the beautiful blonde Nishka.
Yeah.
Her husband, who's Ben
Samantha
Lloyd.
Samantha Bond, wasn't she in the Bond movies?
She was. And she's as well as being in Downton Abbey, if anybody here is a, you know, fan of that as well. Mm-hmm. But Samantha's done a lot of stuff, and she is amazing. And they all are amazing, actually. Ben's playing Tom, and he really is. He's got it. They've all got it. I'm so impressed. The weirdest thing for me,
Emily Charlotte, and
yeah,
Samantha Bond's the mother.
The weirdest thing for me in this was, like, you know, people will say to you, who do you visualize as the actors in your book? And I don't do that. I bet you don't either, do you, George?
Not generally. A couple of times I have, and then I'm with Newbery and Hobbs, because I've been asked so many times in these meetings, I've started to say, oh, it's this actor and this actor, and that's actually now sneaked back in, and so now I do think of them when I'm writing.
Oh, that's amazing.
It's only because I've been asked so many times.
I hadn't ever thought of it, and it was kind of like I invent these people in my head, and they're who they are. And so I was like, when everyone asking me at the beginning, oh, who do you visualise? I was like, I don't know. Well, Skarsgård, of course, Alexander Skarsgård would always be good value, but we know who could afford him. but it was amazing that the characters, once I saw them on set, And Nina Wardia plays the housekeeper in the book as well. She plays Mrs. Tanner, a very key mm-hmm. role.
And the other guy is
Joseph Marcel, who was in Fresh Prince of Bel Air, the butler in George Jeffrey Butler in.
You know Fresh Jeffrey, Prince. The butler in Fresh Prince.
I remember him? Yeah,
and he's awesome.
He's great. So great. But each of the actors now, as I've seen them perform, have now become the character for me. Yeah. It's happened in the reverse, which is so strange. But I love them as it. I see them as it now.
Sam was already talking about the sequel with Nina.
When Nina Wardy, it was like, yeah, maybe we ought to write a sequel. If it does well, I will.
Oh, dear.
Brilliant.
So we've had an interesting year, haven't we?
It sounds like we all have.
Yes.
It sounds like we've all had an amazing year.
Amongst all the difficult stuff.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And now we're heading to Christmas and... Obviously, today, this day of recording, we've obviously heard we all seem to be going into lockdown even more again.
More so.
And it's.
But let's not end on a negative
mind.
Note.
Yes, never mind. It's all for the greater good.
We'll eat lots of mince pies and drink lots of Christmas spirits.
Yes.
What's wine. On the telly. Quick is great and small.
So while we were talking there, I saw Eloise, you had a little friend visited you.
Oh, yeah, one of my cats, Lucky, he came over. I think he could hear people talking, so he was trying to work out where that was coming from.
Ah, there you go. And where are you with your cats, Patricia? Locked away?
I've opened the window, so one of them is sitting in the window and looking at the rain. And where is the other one? Oh, she's asleep.
For various cats around the place. I'm afraid I've got to say we've only got 3 minutes left. So Sam, would you like to say farewell?
Oh, yeah. Alex,
so in that case, then I think signing off for the Stone Tapes, I would just say thank you to everyone. Thank you so much to George Mann.
Thanks for having me.
Well done this year. I'm so stoked for your success this year. It's amazing.
Yeah, brilliant.
Thank you so much to Robin Pearce.
And thank you for all your reviews and coverage and all of your sterling support for the midweek drive. And
it's always a delight to hear your
piercing the veil and all of this stuff. That's fantastic. Well done.
Thank you so much to Eloise, who is always great.
Obviously, superstar actress in the making.
We're looking forward to hearing more about this.
I want to know what
future.
That is. I'm
I will let you know.
Yeah.
So amazing to see you, Patricia. So glad you're well.
We didn't talk about the baking, but it sounds like...
We didn't talk about the bake-off, but another time.
Baking!
God, we've been obsessed with baking programs as well. So.
No.
Food.
Do I know how to
food
bake?
Has been the problem.
Have I seen people bake? Yes.
Oh, we like to see people bake.
We like to watch people
food
bake.
Food porn, as they call it. Yes, it is.
And thank you to Samantha Stone.
Lee Howell
Stone, whatever your name is.
Formerly Sam Stone.
The actress formerly known as.
And thank you so much to Alex. And I hope your year hasn't been too horrifying.
No time to say anything, Sam. We've got to go. No time to say anything. Bye.
Oh!
That's us signing up.
Happy Christmas to everybody. Happy Christmas.
Bye.
Bye.